This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington, coming up on Africa News Tonight.
For the time that I shall be president of Zimbabwe, I solemnly promise that I shall, to the best of my ability, serve everyone, who calls and considers Zimbabwe their home.
That's Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, promising to take his country on a different path. He was speaking during his swearing-in ceremony in Harare. Also, Egypt declares 3 days of national mourning as the death toll tops 230 following Friday's mosque attack in North Sinai. And a South African court doubles Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius' prison sentence. He now faces 13 years in prison for killing his girlfriend in 2013. We'll have these stories and more for you, so stay with us. There's lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story. For the first time in 37 years, Zimbabwe has a new head of state. Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn in as president today. He takes over from Robert Mugabe, the only leader the country had known since independence. Mugabe was forced to resign earlier this week. Mnangagwa was Mugabe's right-hand man for decades. Today he paid tribute to the former president, but promised to take Zimbabwe on a different path. VOA's Anita Powell attended the historic inauguration in Zimbabwe's capital, Harare, and filed this report.
Zimbabwe's new leader was sworn in Friday in a pomp-filled, exuberant ceremony filled with music, dancing, dignitaries, and promises from new president Emmerson Mnangagwa.
I, Emmerson Mnangagwa, say that as President of the Republic of Zimbabwe, I will be faithful. To Zimbabwe and obey, uphold, and defend the Constitution and all other laws of Zimbabwe.
President Mnangagwa won't have time to rest on his laurels and celebrate winning the job he clearly eyed for decades while serving as Mugabe's right-hand man. He will serve out the remainder of Mugabe's term, which is slated to end in mid-2018. Nevertheless, he laid out an ambitious program of economic, social, and political reforms.
For the time that I shall be president of Zimbabwe, I solemnly promise that I shall, to the best of my ability, serve everyone who calls and considers Zimbabwe their home. I encourage all of us to remain peaceful, even as preparations for political contestations for next year's harmonized, free and fair elections gather momentum. The voice of the people is the voice of God.
Attendees said they were most interested in the economic promises that Mnangagwa made, which comprised the majority of his speech. He said Zimbabwe would attempt to pay its international debts, would loosen import restrictions, and would work to make sure Zimbabweans could get easier access to hard currency, a promise which drew massive cheers in a nation where 9 currencies are legal tender, but where cash is woefully scarce. The 60,000-seat stadium in the capital was packed to the rafters with thousands of revelers who arrived several hours before the main event. But one absence stood out. 93-year-old Robert Mugabe was nowhere to be found among the front row of Southern African presidents, current and former. Mnangagwa, who was a close ally of Mugabe until Mugabe fired him earlier this month and set off the crisis that prompted Mugabe to resign, praised his predecessor and urged people to forgive. Some attendees traveled a long way for the ceremony, like 34-year-old Solomon Gatsa, who took a 5-hour bus from the nation's second city of Bulawayo. He offered the new president some simple advice.
The first thing is starting to change the economy. After that, the people have to have the job.
Amelia Majandari, who was 35, said she was less focused on the details of his speech. She said she has only ever known one president, Mugabe, and had to see this event in person.
I'm very excited. I wanted to see for myself. Is it real? I'm overexcited. I'm over the joy I have.
Mnangagwa, too, appeared pleased as he accepted the ceremonial sash and trappings of the presidency. But, he said, Zimbabwe has many, many challenges ahead. And he told his people that for things to improve, everyone would need to get to work. Zimbabweans listened. However, the honking horns and the dancing in the streets of Harare Friday indicates that many people are taking a day to celebrate first. Anita Powell, VOA News, Harare.
Well, few will forget this week in history when Mugabe fell from power after 37 years at the helm. But 6 years ago, Egyptian Hosni Mubarak was forced out after 3 decades in power. In both cases, succession was a major factor in their downfall. Ahmed Fati is the managing editor of the New York-based group American Television News Incorporated. He spoke to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi about succession battles under dictatorships.
37 years is quite a substantial, long time to rule a country. Robert Mugabe did not just rule Zimbabwe, he transformed it into a kind of a private property for him and his family. He was a historical leader of independence, and he gained the independence back then. And he consolidated his power through a party, which is the ZANU-PF, but giving concessions to create small pockets of corruption throughout the country. Zimbabwe has the largest shrinking economy in the world, have an astronomical annual inflation of 221% annually. And still, he controlled the military, he controlled the judiciary, he controlled the security apparatus. All came to a point that these entities saw that it is in their benefit to force Mugabe out, especially after the army has moved and the generals have withdrawn their support for Mugabe, although they were a main tool into oppressing the Zimbabwean people.
So how would you compare the falling of Mugabe to that of Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak in 2011?
The key similarity between the fall of Mugabe and the fall of Mubarak in 2011 is that family. This is the key word. Mubarak wanted to pass down the power to his son, Gamal, while Robert Mugabe wanted to pass the power to his wife and Vice President Grace. So search for the family, the two similarities are quite obvious. The other part, how the people received both the news of the resignation of Mubarak and of Mugabe. I was watching yesterday, and I said to myself, this scenes I have seen all over again. The jubilation of the population out in the street, the friendly gestures from the military towards the people of Zimbabwe. This we have all seen in Tahrir Square back in February 11, 2011. So both of them have similarities. Both of them ruled for extended period of time. Mubarak ruled for 30 years. Mugabe ruled for 37 years.
Is there a reason for the people of Zimbabwe to celebrate the departure of their dictator?
Of course, it's a big event, but what does the future hold? That's the main question. I was looking over some reports coming from Harare. It seems there is a tendency or a leniency towards forming a coalition government to take over. The ZANU-PF party have elected a new leader who was served previously as the Mugabe's vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa. And he's trying now to reach out to the opposition leader, namely the Democratic Movement of Change. How long this outreach is going to last, how long the peace is going to last, I don't think, based on our experiences and observation in the Middle East, it's going to last for long. This can be a maneuver to absorb the anger of the street. But at the end, Mnangagwa holds a lot of power. He's a ruthless operator, same way as Mugabe. What's going for Mnangagwa a little bit further, that he is preferred by China. China is the largest investor in Zimbabwe. Whether they liked how Mugabe was running the economy or not, Mnangagwa represents for them a safer bet to protect their interests in this country.
Final question. What is the lesson to be learned from the rise and fall of both Mubarak and Mugabe?
The main lesson, I think, that it is relatively easy to remove a dictator from office, but it is an extremely difficult task to root out dictatorship from every corner in the country, since they become really deep-rooted and they stand as an obstacle towards forming a modern and vibrant democracy.
And that was Ahmed Fati, managing editor of the New York-based group American Television News Incorporated, speaking to VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi. Well, it's a tragic day in Egypt, as the Egyptian government has declared 3 days of mourning following today's deadly attack on the Al Radar Mosque in North Sinai. A bomb ripped through the mosque as Friday prayers ended, killing at least 235 people and wounding about 120 others. Eyewitnesses say men in four off-road vehicles approached and carried out the attack. The attackers were then seen planting explosives around the mosque, which were detonated as worshippers left. They reportedly also opened fire on those who fled. This was the deadliest attack in the region, and no one has claimed responsibility for it. Egyptian security forces have battled an Islamic State insurgency in North Sinai, which has killed hundreds of police and soldiers. Moving to Cameroon now, where opposition lawmakers disrupted parliament for a second day in a row, a sign that tensions are deepening over the government's handling of the crisis in the country's Anglophone regions. Moki Edwin Kinzeka is in Yaounde for us and filed this report.
These are the voices of the lawmakers of Cameroon's main opposition party, the Social Democratic Front. They are demanding Parliament hold debates on how to resolve the year-long strike in the two English-speaking regions. SDF's Joseph Mbandam is also Vice Speaker of Parliament.
We have been here for more than 1 year, and in every session, nothing is said about the crisis. So we have decided today that nothing will go on here if we do not find a definitive solution to the Anglophone crisis.
The crisis has grown increasingly violent over the past year as separatist groups have emerged. Many schools in the southwest and northwest remain shut, and a strike has closed down many businesses. French speakers are the majority in the bilingual country, and Anglophone activists say they are marginalized. Many are demanding reforms, while others want all-out independence. Most of the SDF lawmakers hail from the two Anglophone regions. They have faced threats and physical assaults for continuing to serve in the National Assembly amid the crisis. The SDF lawmakers announced a boycott a week ago, demanding the government do more to peacefully end the strike. On Thursday, they began singing to interrupt Parliament's proceedings. Government ministers had come to answer questions on last year's budget and the 2018 financial plans. Kavai Yege Jibril, the Speaker of the National Assembly, says he could not bear the disturbances by the SDF and called off the plenary. He announced that the ruling CPDM majority had voted and adopted last year's settlement bill, even though no vote had taken place. The CPDM controls 148 seats in the 180-member parliament and the SDF just 18. Political analyst Raymond Etoga says the SDF won't be able to derail the passing of the 2018 budget, but the government should heed their calls for open debate to resolve the Anglophone crisis.
In order for us to be able to create a society where everyone can feel part of, we must understand that truth is very necessary. And we are in a quagmire situation at this point in time because the system in place has refused categorically to be able to say this is white and this is black.
Professor Elvis Ngolengole, a close aide of President Paul Biya, has been leading teams to dialogue with the population in the northwest and southwest.
Those who felt they were excluded, I think it's genuine. As we continue, there will be more inclusion than exclusion because no one should be excluded. As long as we're a democracy, and we believe in it. As long as we're a republic, we'll keep on talking to one another, and that's dialogue.
However, government overtures at dialogue have also coupled with a crackdown. Following violent unrest last December, troops were deployed to the Anglophone regions and the internet was cut for 3 months. The government has released several dozen people detained for months over the strike. Activists say more remain behind bars and must also be released before any dialogue can take place. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
Well, it's bad news for South African Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius. He's now looking at 13 years behind bars for killing his girlfriend Reeva Steenkamp on Valentine's Day in 2013. The Supreme Court of Appeals more than doubled the 6-year prison term previously imposed on Pistorius by a lower court. Prosecutors had appealed that original sentence, calling it shockingly lenient. The court has, however, deducted the time Pistorius has already served either in prison or under house arrest. This means he faces an outstanding sentence of 13 years and 5 months. 15 years is South Africa's usual minimum sentence for murder. Meanwhile, the family of murdered model Reeva Steenkamp welcomed the longer prison term, saying it showed that justice can prevail in South Africa. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Heidi Adams Fitzpatrick in Washington. And at 22 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabwe has a new head of state. Emmerson Mnangagwa was sworn in as president today. He paid tribute to his predecessor and mentor, Robert Mugabe, but promised to take Zimbabwe on a different path. Also, Egypt declares 3 days of national mourning as the death toll tops 230 following Friday's mosque attack in North Sinai. And South African court doubles Paralympic athlete Oscar Pistorius' prison sentence. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. In East Africa, Uganda is feeling the effects of a nationwide doctor's strike, which looks set to enter its fourth week. The government's had to bring in medical staff from the army, police force and prisons to fill the gaps at 3 national hospitals in Kampala. Doctors across the country downed tools on November 6th to protest poor working conditions and what they call the lowest wages in Africa. VOA's Catherine Nambi is in Kampala with this report.
For over 2 weeks now, many Ugandan patients have been stranded at different health facilities. This as the doctors embarked on industrial action to compel the government to boost their pay and working conditions. Efforts by government to have the doctors return to their duty stations have not yielded any results. Many of those on strike view government proposals as threats and empty promises. To fill the void left by the strike, some medics have been pulled from the Uganda People's Defense Forces, UPDF, and Uganda Prisons Health Facilities. They have been assigned to 3 referral hospitals in Kampala, including Kirundo, Mulago, and Kawempe. Dr. Patrick Otim is one of the UPDF doctors at Kirundo National Referral Hospital in Kampala. He says there are only a few of them and that the army medics have been working in shifts to handle special cases.
We have people who are handling cardiac diseases like heart failures and then end-stage renal failures, and then patients with the communicable disease like HIV and others. We have those ones handling emergencies, and they follow their time of 8 in the morning up to 5, and then those ones who are taking on for call, night duties, they respond accordingly. Then for majority of us who are on the ward, we return to duty as normal.
The Uganda Police Force has also deployed their officers in key strategic departments of the referral hospitals. Dr. Moses Byaruhanga is a Uganda police pathologist who has been assigned to handle the Kampala City mortuary.
We have 5 doctors. One of them is me, who is a pathologist. Here at the mortuary, services are also required. So if I personally leave this place to go and get stationed maybe in some other place, nobody is going to cover this place. And people are going to make a noise. People are going to carry their bodies here. People will go to the streets. And now that one will be also another issue.
The mortuary handles between 20 and 30 bodies on a daily basis. Richard Kalemire is the spokesperson of the Ugandan Army, UPDF. He says they have assigned only 6 medics to the civilian hospitals to avoid leaving military personnel without medical care.
Of course, we are not going to deplete our military hospitals 100%, but we think the few that will remain will be able to support us, will be able to provide the basic medical services to us as a UPDF.
Frank Baine is the Uganda prison spokesperson. He says all their deployed medical personnel have been instructed to put on civilian clothing so as to make patients comfortable with the officers.
A doctor is a doctor. In order not to scare the patients, ours will be in civilian. They should look as normal as a civil hospital is always.
The move to deploy the army, police and prisons medics has been seen as one of the attempts by government to push through with threats of sacking the striking medics. However, the medics insist they will not bow down to any pressure or intimidation until their demands are met. Dr. Ekwaro Obuku is the president of the Uganda Medical Association.
We were hoping to have some tangible results which would have given us basis to call off this industrial action. The government continued its stance on attempting to intimidate the workers, and that is not in tandem with the prescribed best practices of attempting to engage workers by the International Labour Organization.
The medics want a pay rise of nearly $2,000 per month. Currently, a senior doctor earns about half that amount, while a medical officer earns about $500 a month. The medics also want the government to provide them with housing and vehicles. The government has branded the doctor's strike as illegal, saying it is steered by an association rather than a trade union. It says it can only negotiate with the Uganda Medical Workers Union and the Uganda Nurses and Midwives Union. The government says a review of all civil servant salaries are ongoing. But early last week, President Yoweri Museveni accused the doctors of betrayal and warned that they risk being sacked if they continue with the strike because government is going to recruit new doctors. Past strikes among doctors and teachers have usually not lasted longer than a week. And the government has not before followed through on threats to replace the striking workers. The question now is whether that government policy will change. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Heidi Adams-Fitzpatrick in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the sunny side of sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Chung, thank you for choosing the Voice of America.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there. VOA. On weekends, tune into Nightline Africa at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.